Okay, so the next excerpt, as I mentioned in the beginning, Krishna's daily pastimes are broken out into, sometimes it's 8 divisions. It appears in Govinda Lilamrita 6. So this one is part of the, it's the ending of the afternoon pastimes. In the morning, after Krishna has his breakfast, then Krishna, all the cowherd boys, they spend the day in the pasturing grounds in the forest, taking care of the cows. And during the day, the gopis and the cowherd boys, there's different exchanges, and there are times when Krishna slips away from the cowherd boys to be with Radharani. So there is a part when it's time for Krishna to come home. So this is what I want to read. Krishna re-enters Vraja. When Nanda Maharaj, the king of Vraja, saw the sun about to set on the western horizon, he longed to see his son, Krishna. He gazed into the distance to see the dust upraised by the hoofs of the Surabhi cows, and he strained his ears to hear the sound of Krishna's flute. Nanda and his friends jubilantly hurried to the cow barn to meet Krishna when he arrived. The people of Vraja were very eager to see Lord Krishna and the cowherd boys, who were all temporarily covered by a network of dust raised by the Surabhi cow's hooves. So the way Krishna Das Kaviraj writes this book, it's so descriptive that you can actually vision it. To get a better view, they all stood on a little hill. They appeared like a row of planets glistering in the evening sky. So the word glister, I never heard that word. This translation is by my godbrother, Kusha Pratadas. It's his translation. So glistering means lively, brilliant, and also to exhibit virtuosity, like the chanter that we just had was glistering in his singing. As Lord Hari delighted his friends with clever words and encouraged them to decorate themselves with flowers, Krishna approached the outskirts of Vraja's village. By playing his flute, Lord Krishna made the cows stop at a large lake. One after another, Krishna made each group of cows drink the water. Lord Krishna then counted the number of cows, each identified by a different colored jewel around her neck. So some people count money, Krishna counts cows. So if somebody ever says, "What does your God do?" Oh, he counts cows. Lord Krishna was very happy to see all his cows and his friends' cows present. Sounding his flute and calling each cow by name. Wow. Each cow has a name. He quickly assembled them all together and caused them to walk towards Vrajabhumi. Lord Krishna's body was colored reddish-brown because of the dust upraised by the Surabhi cows. He wore a peacock feather in his moving locks of hair, garlands of gunja and forest flowers, and exquisite garments. He carried a rope for binding the cows at milking time, a leaf flute. Now, I don't know what a leaf flute is, but that's what this says here. Huh? What's a leaf flute? Who knows? Somebody knows? Oh. A leaf flute, a stick, and a buffalo horn bugle. This is another thing I like about the books that we read. you get a very clear description of God. Where else are you going to find such a complete description of what God looks like, what He likes to do? This is so fabulous. We get exact description. He had beautiful eyelashes and a large, wide open, reddish, restlessly moving eyes. His fatigue from wandering so long in the forest made him appear very beautiful, and his beauty showered nectar on the chakora birds of all the people's eyes. The sweet sounds of his flute agitated and enchanted the young gopis. In this way, accompanied by his friends, who were very much like him, Lord Krishna entered the village of Vraja. The splendid clouds of Lord Krishna's beauty rose over the land of Vraja, showering torrential rains of the sweet nectar of the sound of his flute, thus extinguishing the forest fire of the Vrajavasi's separation from Krishna. What poetry! Such metaphors Krishnadas Kaviraj is using. When the robber king of separation from Krishna heard the tumultuous sound of the buffalo horn bugles blown by the cowherd boy soldiers in the army of the king of Lord Krishna's arrival. Yes, people join the army all over the world. This is the army I want to join. The army of Krishna's cowherd boys. You know, in an army, especially in the old days, I think even now, they have a bugle. Dun, 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 dun. So, I think this bugle is better. You get your own bugle to play. And they saw waving flags of the dust upraised by the Surabhi cows. They became frightened and at once fled the land of Vraja, accompanied by his own army of anxiety, constant melancholy, inertness, pain, and restlessness. So that's all the symptoms of the separation from Krishna. So when everybody heard the sound of the buffalo horn, then all these things, anxiety, melancholy, they all fled. Because now Krishna has returned. When the monsoon season of Lord Krishna's arrival came, bringing dark clouds of dust raised by the Surabhi cows, thunder of the cows mooing, and the torrential nectar rains of flute music, the thirsty Chataka birds of the Vrajavasis jubilantly waited with upraised faces. Vraja's king Nanda, with his Gopa brothers, and Vraja's queen Yashoda, with her assistants, quickly approached their two sons. So who were the two sons? Who were the two sons? Krishna and Balaram. And at once embraced them, leaving the kitchen in the care of the maidservants. Those two servants, Rohini and Atula, approached the two boys, Krishna and Balaram, and happily embraced them. The sound of Lord Krishna's flute aroused amorous desires in the moon-faced Vrajagopis, who had beautiful teeth. So I guess no need of dentists in Vrindavan, because the gopis, they have beautiful teeth. They began to stutter, and their garments became loose. Without a trace of remorse or a second thought, they at once left their homes. When the amazing son of Lord Krishna arose before the people of Vraja, their lotus eyes and Kumuda flower smiles at once blossomed. Their Chandrakant gem bodies perspired, and their life force obtained cooling relief from the blazing fires of separation. And when the amazing eternally full moon of Lord Krishna rose before the young girls of Braja. The lotus flowers of their faces blossomed with happiness. The many owls of the suffering of their joyless moments of separation from Krishna all fled and hid. And the Chakravaki birds of the gopis' body met with their lovers, the Chakravaki birds of the gopis' living force. The thirsty bumblebee of the eyes of the young girls in Vraja were very greedy to drink the glistening honey of Lord Krishna's beauty. They all flew through the opposing windstorm of shyness and landed on the lotus flower of Lord Krishna's face. Buffeted by the strong winds of shyness, the two greedy bumblebees of Lord Krishna's eyes finally landed on the blossoming lotus flowers of the faces of the gopis, hiding among the vines in Vraja. The gopis repeatedly gazed at the lotus flower of Lord Hari's face, repeatedly touched the breeze that had contacted Lord Hari's body, repeatedly smelled the fragrance of Lord Hari's body, and repeatedly relished the flute sound filled with the honey of Lord Hari's lips. In this way, the gopis carefully nourished their five senses with the nectar of Lord Hari. When Sri Rati Radharani shot the arrow of her sidelong glance, she mortally wounded Lord Krishna in his most sensitive spot. However, when the other gopis pierced Krishna's body with the arrows of their sidelong glances, he remained unharmed and unaffected. So here's another example of how Radharani is supreme. You all are familiar with that story in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Krishna pretended to be Narayan in front of all the gopis, and they bought it. But when Radharani came, Krishna could not keep up the two extra arms. He couldn't hide in front of Radharani. It's not Narayan, it's Krishna. So that is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it shows, it's an example of the point that is taught in that book, that among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is supreme. And although Krishna is unconquerable, he still can be conquered by the immense love that Srimati Radharani has. When Radharani sprinkles a single drop of the nectar of her gentle smile from the moon of her face, Lord Krishna experiences a happiness so intense that even the inundation of hosts of cascades of nectar of the smiles from the moons of the faces of many beautiful-eyed gopis cannot produce anything to compare with it. When I read this book from time to time, and I just read this, it's something that I'm always reminded of. That in the material world, the conditioned soul, this is the kind of love the conditioned soul wishes he could achieve. But when you read this book and you read how Radha and Krishna, how they enjoy pastimes, it makes the loving affairs of human beings silly. If somebody thinks, I'm a great lover, compared to what I read, how Krishna does his loving pastimes, what human beings do is child's play. Nobody can compete, nobody can imitate the loving affairs of Radha. It's impossible. It's a joke. When I read this book, I go, all these romance stories, and it's just a joke. We read here, here is the original loving affair. You have your hand raised, yes, Bo? Before anyone can speak on the morality of Radha and Krishna, first they have to understand Bhagavad Gita. First they have to understand, that's why Prabhupada always points out that Vyasadeva put Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, because it takes 9 cantos to understand who is Krishna. Yes, if you simply read externally, yes, Prabhupada makes this point over and over again. It looks like the lusty affairs of an ordinary boy and girl, and then you read it and you say, hey, I can do the same thing. But Vyasadeva says, no, no, no. Let's go through 9 cantos. So in Canto 1, there's 19 chapters, then 10 chapters in 2nd Canto, 33 chapters in 3rd Canto, I think 31 chapters in 4th, 26 in 5, 19 in 6, 15 in 7, 24 in 8 and 9. So you add that up, it's a couple of hundred chapters. Then we get to Krishna Leela. So one has to scientifically understand. Otherwise, you're going to misunderstand. So, for such a person, I would say, let's not discuss this here. Let's start with Bhagavad Gita. Let's start with the 4 regulative principles. First of all, let's give up meat. Let's give up intoxication, gambling, like that illicit sex. Then we can discuss. Okay? Good enough? All right. Who is our next chanter?